The Classic Stage Company's mission is to reimagine classic stories for contemporary audiences. And their latest production, Carmen Jones, is a perfect example of the company at its best. It's Oscar Hammerstein II's 1943 interpretation of Bizet's opera Carmen, set in a parachute factory in the South during World War II. The production, which stars Anika Nani Rose and features choreography by Bill T. Jones, has been garnering rave reviews. It's on stage at CSC's home on East 13th Street, and the run has now been extended until August 19th. Great to hear. I'm delighted to welcome John Doyle, the show's director and artistic director of CSC, to our show. Welcome, John.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Hi. So Oscar Hammerstein's best known for his long collaboration with Richard Rodgers and the musicals he wrote with him, Oklahoma Sound of Music, South Pacific, and so on. Did he write Carmen Jones before that partnership with Rodgers?
No, I think they'd done Oklahoma. I think it was between Oklahoma and Carousel, if my memory serves me rightly. And I think they were looking for another story to tell. And Hammerstein thought, well, he would do one, you know, look for something on his own while they figured something else out. And was inspired to try to find a way of taking opera and making it accessible to then a modern audience. It's ironic that we're still doing something of the same. But I think that was the thinking behind it, really. And of course, in his time, doing this piece with an African-American company was a pretty remarkable gesture, if nothing else, you know, for Broadway. There hadn't been much. There had been Porgy and Bess, and that was about it, really.
Right, and this would have been around 1943, so clearly Hammerstein thinks in big ways. You know, I'm going to do a little opera and make it all black, what the heck?
I know. I mean, you know, 75 years ago, you've really got to put that in some context. It's pretty extraordinary. And that he was setting it in this house, in a parachute factory. We tend to call it an ammunition factory as well, just because I think people can relate to that a little bit more as a concept. But, you know, the world was at war, and he was telling the story about people who were making equipment for the world to be at war, and using the Carmen, the original opera, as the springboard for that. I mean, the score is really pretty exactly Bizet's score, or at least all the tunes of Bizet's score, and what's different, of course, is the text itself and the lyrics.
And the lyrics to that score.
Mm-hmm,
so it's been 75 years since it's been in New York. Why is it you think it hasn't been performed more often?
You know, I think for a long time, people were afraid of it. If you were to look at the piece on the page, it does read as being, you know, I'm not going to say racist because that would be unfair to Hammerstein, because that would certainly not have been his intention. But it does read as being, you know, somewhat hokey at times, and the language used is not at the most sophisticated. It doesn't show the African American community at its best. You know, simplistically, some of the actual sounds are very rough and unfortunate, and we wouldn't accept it today.
Right.
So what we did as a company, very much as a company, the actors and I together, was we just kept working on the text and finding ways to speak it that took away that, you know, white man's view of in 1943 of how an African American spoke, and how to we just found our own way of trying to make it as, I don't want to say as contemporary as possible, but certainly as accessible as possible. And we did the same with the lyrics. So we softened a lot of the sounds, you know, beat out that rhythm on the drum becomes that rhythm on the drum, you know, just very simply. And then, of course, the piece originally, you know, we do it with a company of 10 and an orchestra of 6.
Which is pared down quite a bit.
Oh, quite a bit. It was huge when it was first done. And that's pretty remarkable, too. If you look at the program of the original, you know, a lot of the people who were in it hadn't really done anything, because there wasn't the wonderful scope of performer that we have access to today.
Right.
And so, yes, we cut it down a lot. We're doing it in a small space. It's done in the round, so that gives a really, if you like, that somewhat overused word, but a very immersive feeling of being in the show as opposed to just watching the show. But the thing you have to have, if you're doing Carmen Jones, is you have to have people with pretty extraordinary voices. I mean, it's still sung like an opera, really. And thank God I was able to find the 10 people who could achieve that, or at least I think so, and I think everybody else has felt the same. The vocal sound is pretty spectacular. Now, I've also, you know, the piece is now 95 minutes long, and of course, if in 1943, when people went to the theatre, they expected to see things that lasted 3 hours.
And had an intermission.
And have intermissions and, you know, time to go for dinner. but, you know, I decided to make it feel a little bit more like a musical version of a Greek tragedy, which doesn't have an intermission
right. And
pushes the story forward. I didn't actually, interestingly enough, everybody thinks that I've, you know, I'm kind of known for cutting things down. And everybody thinks that I've hacked at the script and so on. In fact, I haven't. And I've only cut out one song, one chorus song. And I've cut out a big dance ballet in the second act.
Okay.
In the original, like, 12 girl dancers showed up to be entertainment for Husky Miller, the boxer. And I thought, well, I don't think we're going to be able to afford the 12 girl dancers.
So cost sometimes.
And also, I found that somewhat offensive, you know, that you didn't see these girls until the second act when they showed up to do their sweet dancing for him. So we cut that out. But in fairness, I think if Hammerstein were with us today, he'd probably be saying, we would never even have suggested having the ballet, probably, in that, you know, in those days, what happened in the second act was you stopped for a big ballet. I mean, that was a very traditional part of the form.
That's exactly right.
Well, you know, it's just what, you know, you think of all of their shows, there's always
always a dream ballet. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So we took that out, but almost all of the rest of the sung material is there, and the greater percentage of the book is there too.
Can I just go back a little bit when you were talking about the colloquial writing of Hammerstein's?
Yeah.
I just want to talk a little bit more. I'm fascinated by what you said you and the actors did. I mean, I'm looking at some of the song titles and Beat Out Dat Rhythm, Stand Up and Fight, and, you know, James Baldwin at the time that the original movie came out said that the language was an abomination. Can we talk a little bit more about how you and your cast approached those kind of lyrics and made it their own?
I mean, we just tried to make the sound, you know, as you've pointed out, the obviously potentially offensive sounds that could be in the piece. So we just tried to take the same words, say exactly the same thoughts, and so we didn't change the meaning of anything, but just to say, okay, well, how would this be said now? I mean, just speak it for me as you would speak it if you were speaking it now, which is exactly what they did. We really didn't change any vocabulary to do that. It was really the softening of sound, which is what I was referring to earlier on. There's not much in the piece that's directly racist. Mm. As I said, I wouldn't want to, you know, Hammerstein was a smart, tasteful gentleman, so he wasn't having a go at anybody. Mm. But what he was trying to do in his time, let's keep saying that, you know, it was in its time.
Of course.
Was that he was trying to find a way of taking what was originally the Spanish gypsy world and put it into a vernacular and into a world in America that would feel similar in some way. And he chose the African-American community in the South to do that with. So we have, but it was very collaborative between myself and the actors. And really, all we did was, first day of rehearsal, I said, now listen, ladies and gents, I don't really want you to speak it like it is on the page. And my wonderful Anika Noni Rose said, oh, John, you mean like this? And she sort of did a little parody of what it could sound
Can't
like.
Can't hip loving that I man, said, that kind of thing.
I said,
yes.
That's right, Anika, we don't want it to sound like that. We all laughed about it. And we approached it together accordingly. Now, when I did The Color Purple on Broadway, we didn't have that issue because Marcia Norman and certainly Alice Walker had not written something that was in any way a generic form.
True.
But equally, we still had to find a way of speaking it in such a way that every audience would understand it and support it and enjoy it. And that was also done with the collaboration of the actor. You know, I'm very sensitive, as I hopefully am sensitive, but I'm very aware of the fact that here I was, a middle-aged white man, taking this story, which was written by a white man.
Yeah, John, you're a middle-aged country. White man, and it was written by a white man. Yeah, you're right.
You know, and I thought about that a lot, and I thought, okay, well, the music was written by a white man. So, you know, it was a very shared experience between myself and the company in terms of we're telling this together and we're people of two different colors telling this together. And really, what's important about this piece is that this is a classic story. That's mm-hmm. why we're doing it at CSC. You know, Carmen itself is one of the great classic tragedies. It just has been put into this particular world by Hammerstein.
Right.
And now how do we take it? And we didn't, of course, choose to modernize it in terms of, it still is set in the parachute factory.
Right, you didn't make it a parachute factory in 2018 or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was specifically still in the 40s.
You can't do that. And also the music, I think if you just sang that music and you put it in a world of now, then it might be somewhat ridiculous. You know, you'd want to rewrite the score, probably. Just take the tunes and rewrite the score. Can you imagine?
No.
That would be bad.
And a rap number somewhere in it.
Exactly. That's what would end up happening. So we try to be as honest as to the material as possible, always referring to the source material, because I think that was important to do, you know, the original novel and the original opera, and honoring that we're dealing with a big old classic piece, really.
Right. I'm speaking with Tony Award-winning director John Doyle about his new production of Carmen Jones, playing right now at CSC here in New York. Now, you spoke before about the voices, the actors' voices, and their singing voices. Anika Nani Rose, I saw, and Carolina or Change, and you've got such talented people. Do you think it's important for the singers, for the actors, to have an operatic background or not?
No, I don't. I mean, one or two of them do have operatic backgrounds, but we did not start by looking for that. And in fact, quite often in rehearsal, we would say, myself and Joseph Joubert, my wonderful collaborator who was the music supervisor and also reorchestrated the piece, we kept saying, now listen, don't make it so operatic, you know. Mm. Don't put so much, for anybody who knows about singing, don't put so much vibrato into it. But try to make it sound not necessarily casual, but easier on the ear than that in some way, you know, more accessible again. So everybody in that room was a wonderful musician. I don't think you could do the piece. It's very sophisticated. I don't think you could do it without being a wonderful musician.
Right.
So they're all great voices, and God knows they've got to sing it seven times a week, so they've got to be great voices, robust voices. But no, we didn't set out to cast opera singers, but we did set out to find people who could, you know, I mean, whoever comes on and sings Stand Up and Fight, the what was originally the Toreador song, you know, one of the most famous. Yes, that you can't disappoint, you know. And David, who sings that role, has got this wonderful bass baritone voice, and that's thrilling. So the key characters, Clifton, who plays Joe, Lindsay, who plays Cindy Lou, all of them really, they have wonderful instruments, but fundamentally, I was looking for actors
right.
to do it. That was the main thing. In our small space, to find truth, you have to have really fine actors. And I think I found that. And, you know, that centers around the core of the company, which is Anika, who is truly a wonderful, wonderful artist.
And this is a part she's wanted to play for quite a long time.
Yes, it is. I mean, when I met her to talk about it, I didn't know that. I mean, her agent, who's a friend of mine, got in touch and said, would you meet with Anika Nani Rose? I said, sure. And we met, and I didn't meet anybody else about it. I met her, and I thought, oh, my God, this is just, if she wants to do it, this is great by me. And she had wanted to do it for quite a long time.
Right.
I think had tried other theaters to try to get people to do it, and everybody was a little afraid of it, you know. So on some level, we ran a risk by doing this thing. It paid off. That's nice. Sometimes risks do, sometimes they don't.
Now, John,
but
do you
she
think...
was a great collaborator on it as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Do you think the other theaters were afraid because of, as we talked about the material, because they thought it was dated, or they just didn't have a handle on how to present it?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I imagine one of the contributive factors about doing it is that the dated, perhaps what could be perceived to be questionable use of language within it could frighten people off. Did I think about that? Sure, of course I did.
But why did you choose to do it? I mean,
I chose to, a number of reasons, really. Of course, if you're artistic director of a theatre called Classic Stage Company, finding musicals that justify the word classic,
right,
you know, from the classic world, really, is difficult. It's difficult to find them. And, you know, there are many, many marvelous musicals, some of which are great classics in the musical theatre, but they don't fit the genre of the classical theatre.
Right.
And so that was one reason. And I was thinking, shall I do a version of Carmen? Oh, wait a minute, there's Carmen Jones. And I looked into that. I had had such a marvelous experience doing The Color Purple. I don't know if you saw that on Broadway, but that was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I that gave me the access to a lot of artists who, you know, like my collaborators in the music department, who I felt we could really look at the piece together. And I suppose, to be somewhat perverse, I'm always interested in doing something that everybody else tells me really we shouldn't be doing.
Oh, I love that.
For whatever reason, I mean, you know, but there's just a bit of me as an artist that thinks, oh, well, let's find out what's in there. Let's go back and see what's in there.
Well, now, what's fascinating is, you know, you have this history of doing musicals and doing shows again and paring them down.
Yeah.
That really does bring out so much power in these shows. I saw your pared down version of Sweeney Todd and thought, it blew my mind. And I love the original. But
yes. Well, the paring down is never meant to be a negative reflection on the original.
No, it made it more focused, I felt.
Absolutely. It's another, there are other ways, and any great work of art can take another looking at. And I think, you know, it's in some ways, it's with a musical, when you are exploring a musical that people tell you, I mean, Sweeney Todd is not problematic, right? Sweeney Todd is a masterpiece. But something like this, people will say to you, oh, this is problematic, really. Your scope, your field is a little more open because, what are you going to do? You're just going to get that they're just going to be right and that's going to be okay. It's not going to be the end of the world. the peering down is one thing. You know, I was also very, very fortunate in that I have the support of Ted Chapin from the Rodgers and Hammerstein Foundation, if you like, you know, from that organization, who I've done some of their work. Before I did a piece called Allegro down at CSC, which is also a piece of Rodgers and Hammerstein that's very seldom done.
Right.
And when I spoke to Ted Chapin about doing this, I said, look, have I got your permission? He said, sure, have a go and see. And if we don't like it, we won't like it and nothing will happen. You know. Fortunately, they like it, so that's very nice. And we'll see what happens accordingly. But it's been a joyous journey.
I can imagine. And the reviews for this production have been just spectacular. Ben Brantley in The Times called it glorious, breathlessly seductive, and sublime. And I'm just wondering, as we close, is it gratifying to you when the critics like what you've done, or does that even matter to you?
Where it matters to me? It matters to me in that I'm the artistic director of a theater. Does it matter to me personally? Well, sure, I'm a human being. It's very nice if somebody says something positive about you and your work. But if you listen to that, you've also got to listen, you know, you got to believe them all.
No, you know? I don't know. I believe the good ones and I ignore the bad ones, John. That's what I do. I'm giving you that permission. I'm Nancy Giles.
It's very nice to have. Oh. It's very nice when it works out that way. But most importantly, you know, I think if a critic, and this has been proved with this piece, if a critic or two or three can give really something glowing to say and say it so eloquently as somebody like Ben Brantley or Hilton Ours in the New Yorker.
Yes.
When it's got that degree of eloquence, that encourages an audience to go see it. And fundamentally, I think one of the big jobs of a critic is to encourage an audience.
You're right.
And it really is. We should all be saying, you know, none of us should ever decide that we have the answer to what is right or wrong about what's good or bad in the theatre. And so as the artistic director of CSC, I'm absolutely thrilled because it's meaning that that helps us to sell a lot of tickets. And it's not easy to run a not-for-profit theatre off Broadway. And so anything that helps us in that way is such a positive step.
That's true. And to that end, the run has been extended by 3 weeks and is now scheduled to go until August 19th. John Doyle, what a pleasure it was to speak to you. Thank you for joining me. I'm Nancy Giles, and I've been speaking with Tony director John Doyle, Tony winning director John Doyle, about his new production of Carmen Jones.